I had a few people this morning, within an hour of each other, ask, can you tell me how you got a published by Andrews McMeel? And another person asked me, building a poetry profile on Instagram and social media and how that works in terms of being able to make money out of it and all that sort of stuff. I've sort of talked about it before, but I thought, oh, maybe that's a sign. Maybe I'll talk about it today. When I started Instagram in 2018, I think late 2018, 2019. Actually, it was 2017 or 16 when I first tried it. And I posted one really good idea and no one liked it. And I tried it again the next day. Well, a really good idea that I thought of. And I got one like. And then I tried it the next day and then no one liked it. It's like, it is this wanting to be heard, wanting your stuff to be understood in a world where often I've felt just like completely, no, you don't get me. And I know that's kind of a little bit egocentric, a little bit nuts, but I've always had some interesting ideas that no one ever understood. It's like, well, I've got these good ideas, why isn't anyone listening? And maybe that says something about, as a kid, Mum would just endlessly monologue like she was just a radio station talking at me and my brother, and just basically I was just in silence most of my childhood. So yeah, maybe there's that bullshit of wanting to be heard. But I thought I had valuable ideas, and I slowly was recognised for my valuable, interesting thoughts, a little bit sideways, weird thoughts over the years. And I thought, maybe Instagram would like them too. But yeah, it took me a while to get anywhere with social media. And yeah, after those few experiments that I tried over a week or two, I gave up. I thought, I don't know how these poets have built these vast audiences. How do you even do that? That's impossible. And I just remember just giving it up. And I came back to it back in 2018 and 19 with just a new idea, which was just to post as much stuff as I could, as often as I could, and see what happened. And I slowly started to find an audience and that connection with other like-minded, strange, interesting people. I found the first 1,000 people who followed me. It feels really fucked up to talk about building an audience and building a community. Even building a community, I hate that expression. I'm just talking about the nuts and bolts of it. Yeah, the first 1,000 people who read my stuff, followed me. That took 3 years, maybe? 18, 19, 20, 21. Oh, no. Back in 2019. It took me a year to get 1,000 followers. I've seen people do it a lot faster. But 2019, I managed to get up to 3,000 followers or something. And that's when I had a book through a university publisher around that same time. It was around 3,000 mark that I realized, I could pay my bills with this. And I was able to pay my bills in a small way, just make it the tiniest living off with 3,000 followers, who people who liked my stuff and thought my stuff was valuable, and they bought it, which is amazing. And so that blew my little head. Like 20, I don't know, I made a little bit of money to be able to pay my bills and to buy more time to do what I loved. Yeah, I think it was, 10,000 followers maybe came in around 2020, and then 30,000 in 2021. And it was exponential. At the time I felt like I was in some kind of rush to, I'd like to have more followers. That would be amazing, more readers. But I only realize now that how, even though you gain an audience exponentially, that all that time of having almost no followers, I was able to build up this big raft of work over a long time. And even before Instagram, I was doing it for 20 years. With zero followers. Almost feel like that was, I laid the groundwork over 25 years, and it's only the last few years where all that groundwork of flying under the radar, tunneling through the night, it's only just started. It's like, now I'm glad that I was able to do that with no one watching me. I was glad that I had 25 years to work at what I loved with no one watching me. That was that's the blessing in disguise that I didn't know at the time. I was impatient. I would have loved to have had this happen back in my 20s. I remember someone when I was 23, someone said to me, if you haven't made it by 28, you're done. That's it. And I've heard other people say, it's your first book. If your first book doesn't go well, then you're screwed. That's not true. Neither of those things are true. I've self-published heaps of books, 49, and I'm only just now things are starting to work. And that 30 years of laying that groundwork was so important. Even though it's easy for me to say that now, I've got so much momentum and so many stupid ideas that I haven't used or I've reused 10 years later. Little thoughts and stupid. Just I almost feel like getting older is a form of cheating when it comes to writing. I feel like getting older is a form of cheating for so many ways. It's almost, and also to cheat life, because you're gonna die if you get too old. But it is, and a lot of people give up art stuff and those sorts of things by the time they're mid-30s, because other parts of life start to take, like, oh, this is why I was, this is the weird thing that happened decades later. On that too, I've seen a lot of people who've been published in their 20s and 30s, and they were too young. Now they're nowhere. Decades later, they've disappeared. They're gone. Their books are gone. And there's this big sort of cultural thing where you only hear about people in their 20s and 30s publishing books, but my favourite writers have been in their 50s when they publish books. And I've always felt like I can't read someone younger than me. Or my age. I've always read people who are 10 years older than me. They've just lived life. You cheat at writing by getting older. And I've always felt that, and it just makes sense. And when I read Nick Cave's Red Hand Files, he was talking this week about how he's always looked to artists who are older than him, and now he's old enough that the people he was looking up to are now basically all dying or dead. And so he was talking about where to from there. And so now he digs into the dead artists and the dead poets who are around. He talks to them, which is, yeah, that's, I've always found that too. Like, the poets and the writers and the musicians, I've always felt like I've been able to have some sort of conversation with them. When I've read dead poets and dead writers, I now try to find their work when they were at least my age or older and not read their younger work. So that's another thing I do. But yeah, It's funny, this wanting to make it in your 20s and your 30s. I would have loved that, but it didn't happen, and I'm glad it didn't, because, yeah, my favourite artists have all been in their 50s when they've finally broken out, and that's, yeah. Age and racing towards things is just nuts. I remember Quentin Tarantino making it in his late 20s, and I thought, oh, that's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to make it in your late 20s or early 30s, but it's just not true. Even his films, while he's good, I kind of shrug my shoulders at the end of them. But stuff like Milan Kundera, Alfred Hitchcock, they all did their best shit in their 50s and 60s. Anyway, there's a writer called Bradley Trevor Grieve. I don't know why I'm saying this, but it kind of links in. He wrote the Blue Day book, Andrews McMeals, like a little gift book. It was almost like a book of greeting cards, but all in one, about how to get over being blue. Not get over being blue, but in being able to deal with those blue days. And it's kind of cute, and it's well written, but it took off and it sold millions of copies. And I was looking up interviews with him. He's an Australian guy, and he was saying how there's people who sort of give up on their creativity, so they go into advertising and they sell their creativity by working in advertising companies, and their ideas get shitter because they're dealing with very average ideas for a long time. And over time, he said that he's known people who are very talented in their 20s have no talent by the time they're 40. And advertising's renowned for chewing up young people in their 20s and 30s, because it's all about, a lot of advertising relies on humour, and humour runs in fashion. And young people are hooked into fashion more than old people. It's just true. So there's a lot of fashionable ideas that happen in advertising for that reason, because it's very, a lot of it relies on humor, and because humor is memeable and shareable and free marketing and all that sort of stuff. So that's part of it. But I found that interesting how, yeah, just to stick with your own voice that's not through years and decades is really hard, especially when you're not going to get paid for it. I didn't really get paid for it to say my own shit for a long time. It's kind of almost like it's a miracle to hold on to your own vision, your own thoughts, your own strangeness for a long time. I feel like this tale is so fucking old, and it's been around every single, there's someone like a million people like me in every generation who has this same thought. I don't feel like it's new. I feel like it's a forever thing, that old hold on to what makes you, and to share with the world that the world gets as well, because they understand that. I'll go back to the start, which was really just patience of sticking with your own thoughts and betting on yourself when there's no certainty. I did it for years, uncertain, that uncertainty. And still, like, even though there's some good things are happening and I'm going to publish a couple of books, but I kind of love that about Instagram or social media, how hard it is to build an audience to begin with, because in that time you get to go unnoticed, you get to not show what you're working on for a while, you get to work undercover for a long time until a bigger audience sees it, and I'm glad that I had to wait. You cheat at writing by getting older. Anyway, yeah, if you'd like to leave a review for this on Spotify or Apple or a comment on YouTube, I'd love it.